I
don't expect you to be funny.
Wow. I don't expect you to be nice.
That sounds right. That tracks with my
and
experience.
Here we are. Welcome back, everybody, to Beyond Sunday.
Stop that. That's my job. I'm second in command.
Are you?
When the captain's off the ship, I'd take right. the bridge.
Who decided this?
All right. Welcome back, everybody, to mm-hmm. another episode of Beyond Sunday podcast. This is Pastor David Bowser. Not with us today is Patrick Nazaroff, but with
Boo.
Me in studio, Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
Good morning, Elise. How are we doing?
I'm doing great.
Excellent.
How about you?
I'm doing all right.
You're in the middle of Holy Week.
I am in
recording.
The middle of Holy Week. Yeah. And Patrick knocked out on
he
us.
He bounced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See ya. See you great. On the other side of the
yeah.
resurrection, Jesus.
Right. See you on Sunday.
That's right. No, he's got sick kids, and you know.
Oh, that's fair.
Sickness waits for no holy days, so no. here we are. But no, yeah. it is Holy Week. We start the great 3 days tomorrow. So
the great three.
The great three.
Yeah.
Do you know what the great three are? Because you said it like
Maundy,
sarcastically.
Maundy, Thursday.
There you go. That's a good start.
Good Friday. Uh-huh. Easter Sunday.
So close. You missed a day.
What is Saturday?
Easter Vigil.
But yeah.
That's the great three.
Three.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
But everybody knows Sunday.
Sunday is not one of the great three. These three all lead up to Sunday.
Oh,
Sunday
my
is
Lord.
Sunday is Easter. These okay. are the great three, the tridium. Yeah.
Okay. But Easter Sunday is not known as the great one.
I mean, it is the thing.
I'm just like, saying, how do these get the credit for being the great three when the main event?
I don't, you know, now that I said it, I don't know that their technical title has great in it. I think I might have just said that kind of off
made
the cuff.
It up.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're trying to make it cooler.
They're the 3 days or okay. the tridium. Yeah. If you want to be Latin about it. Yeah.
The tridium.
Yeah.
That's much cooler.
Yeah.
Than the
I mean,
three
but
days.
Nobody knows what it means. So. Well,
it doesn't matter.
It
you
means
can
3 days.
Just drop it. Like, oh, the tridium. And everybody will be like, oh, yeah.
Ooh, oh, yeah, yeah sure,
of course.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah. No one wants to admit that we don't know what something means.
Nope. Just go along with it.
There it is. But that's not what we're going to talk about. Before we get into our topic today, mm-hmm. We've got a news story. But before we hit that, we do want to let everybody know we're going to be talking about purity culture and sexual ethics within Christianity. And so that might be a conversation that you and any of your other listeners may or may not want to participate in at this time. So if you want to choose to listen at another time, that'd be great. But that's what we're going to be talking about today. Mm-hmm. So consider yourselves
warned.
That sounds more ominous than I meant it to. But yeah, you know, just so you know what's coming. But we got a funny news story first, or at least a news story.
We have a news story. Yeah, thank you for that, lead-in.
I like to say.
I feel so confident now.
Reasonable expectations for everyone. Yeah.
Wow. see if I do this again. today's news story is from The Guardian, and I thought it's our friends.
It's very British. Across the pond. That's
yes.
Right.
I thought it was appropriate to do some April Fool's news today.
Oh, because we are recording.
Time
on
of
April
recording
Fool's, yeah.
April Fool's. I got you a little bit of an April Fool's joke.
I mean,
it
me?
Wasn't super funny.
It's
but
not like I came up like all panicked, like, oh, God, we have a. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I told him that we had a special guest for the podcast today.
She did not. The special guest was her.
Yeah. It's just me. And I'm not a guest, nor am I that special. So it's just
0-2.
Yeah, just a normal day. Anyway, very funny stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so The Guardian has done a roundup of so far the funniest April Fool's like mm-hmm. brand specific
okay.
launches
right.
that have happened.
Is that for this year or is this like over time?
It's for this year. So
okay.
for this April Fool's, remember they're like 6 hours
right.
ahead.
Right. They've got a lead. Yep.
Yep. So most of these are food themed, which is great yeah. for us. We do a lot of food themed news. Mm-hmm. So they say a major theme in recent years of April Fool's jokes by brands has been the announcement of unlikely collaborations.
Okay.
And
all
this
right.
year, Heinz and Perfect Ted, who I don't know who that is, are claiming they are getting together to produce matcha flavored mayonnaise.
Gross.
That's the first one.
I don't.
I know
that.
How you feel about mayonnaise.
I don't like matcha. So
you don't like matcha.
Yeah, nothing
okay.
about this is seeming
I'm
appealing.
A matcha fiend.
Fiend?
Fiend. I drink matcha twice a day.
Okay. Would you eat it in mayonnaise?
No.
Okay.
In fact, I would not. There are many things that I have eaten matcha in that I would eat matcha in
yeah.
the future. Mayonnaise is not one of them.
On the Great British Bake Off, mm-hmm. which I'm a fan of,
okay.
Paul Hollywood, who's one of the judges, does not care for matcha, and people continue to try to put matcha in things.
Like change his mind?
I don't know if they're like setting out to try to change his mind, but every
right.
time somebody's like, "Anyone can put some matcha," and he like glares at them, and it's really
right.
amusing.
Nice. a prank that hits a sweeter spot is the promise from the dessert manufacturer, Goo.
Oh, yeah.
Great name. That is partnering with Dr. Will's Sriracha Hot Sauce to produce a Sriracha Chocolate Melting Middle Pudding, which is
actually,
a spicy sweetness. Yes,
that
it
could
sounds
be good, yeah.
good right? Like, I like a little bit of like the chili pepper chocolate
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, yeah,
like
the Mexican
that,
hot chocolate
yeah.
kind of style. Yeah, that could
I don't
be.
Hate that. Maybe mm-hmm. they should actually make it.
Yeah.
Pizza is a good topic for
I
a joke.
I love pizza.
Normally. The pineapple producer, Dole, has announced the absolutely disgusting sounding concept of the Hawaiian pizza in a can.
Okay, that's gross. I don't want my... Yeah.
Yeah.
I like pineapple on pizza. I don't need it in a can.
Yeah, I know that's controversial, but I'm like,
it's not controversial because we're both here.
I don't know that it's actually Hawaiian.
It's definitely not.
But like pineapple on pizza, I'm not mad at it. Sure. Because
It usually has Canadian bacon. And
pineapple. Right, and that's so also like those two things are good separately. They're pretty good together on a pizza.
Yeah, and also Canadian bacon is just ham. Let's just call it what it is.
Pizza is anarchy now. Like pizza can be anything. We have dessert.
We had
pizzas.
Iguana pizza. Right.
We had iguana pizza. What? Why are we hung up on the pineapple?
That's right.
The restaurant chain Zizzy says it's offering pizza with a candy floss topping, which
like cotton candy.
Yep.
I mean, dessert pizza with cotton candy.
Right.
On it?
Is it? Is there a regular pizza?
I don't want like a meat lovers with candy cotton on. Or
right.
Cotton candy. I love that it's British and they call it candy floss.
Candy floss. Yeah, it's very cute.
As if you're supposed to floss with it.
Posh, the candy floss.
Mm-hmm.
Domino's has suggested a new pizza will be available. The pot noodle stuffed crust, which I think is like ramen noodles.
Okay.
But
all right.
That actually
has some opportunity. Yeah.
Again, don't hate it. Are you a Doctor Who fan, or were you?
I have never been into Doctor Who, but I know the premise. Okay. There's a thing called a TARDIS, and he travels around fixing history.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This might not land so well with you.
That's all right.
If you're not into the lore, but some
people
will be.
I'll laugh appropriately, just point.
There is an Icelandic pizza seller who has announced a new Doctor Who-themed garlic bread called the Dalek bread. Do you get that one?
No, but I was laughing appropriately.
It's shaped like the Daleks.
Okay, yeah. I definitely know what that is. That's great.
It's a garlic bread shaped like the Daleks from Doctor Who, Dalek.
Which is not the TARDIS.
It's not the TARDIS. It's different. Totally different, not even a little bit similar.
All right, fair enough.
And we'll leave it there. Aldi has announced.
Yeah, we know Aldi.
Yeah, we do know Aldi. That they are going to make shopping more comfortable for your adult partners. They have engineered a shopping cart with a Lazy Boy recliner in the front.
Also, don't hate it.
Yes, yeah, it's pending approval.
I'm okay with that plan, Aldi. Let's move forward with that. I will even put 50 cents into that little cart thing to get that armchair out rather than the quarter that I normally have to put in.
This is less food related, but I think this one is actually pretty funny since protein is such like a current craze right now.
There's a war on it, I hear.
Carmoola has announced an air freshener for cars that claims to diffuse protein during your drive to work.
So you can just breathe in your protein? Okay, very nice.
I hate that idea, but it's pretty funny.
I don't think that's how protein works. Can you inhale protein?
No, I imagine that would cause problems.
I mean, I don't know. Things are in the air all the time. Maybe there's like...
Yeah, but that's why you have nose hairs. Catch the things.
I mean,
it doesn't
catch all the things.
Especially not if you trim your nose hairs.
A lot of things get in.
What kind of things are getting in?
I mean, I don't know, but things get in. That's how you get like sick and stuff like
that. Right. I mean, yeah. Either you inhale it or like through your mouth or...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'm just saying...
It's not a perfect system.
I don't think inhaling proteins is how we absorb proteins.
It's not, in fact. Yeah. I think digestion is pretty key for
protein
absorption.
I'm not a medical doctor. I don't know how things work.
No.
I'm just saying there are things that can be absorbed through inhalation. Yeah. I don't think proteins.
I don't know that anybody's tried to snort protein, for one thing.
Sure. There's an option.
I mean, maybe somebody out there
Next time I get my steak, just go right, at it.
Yeah.
Can I get my steak ground up into a very fine powder?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. All right. So on to our topic of the day.
Topic of the day.
As of release, this will be the Monday after Easter. So happy Easter season, everyone. Hope you all had a wonderful Easter holiday and celebrated the resurrection of our Lord appropriately. Tomb is empty and all that stuff. Did you have a good Easter? I'm assuming you did.
I celebrated appropriately, whatever that means.
Hopefully coming to church. And yeah.
Yes, I'll be at church. My kids singing.
See? Oh, there you go. Whatever it takes. That's why we have the kids sing. We're going to actually start having the kids sing every week. That's going to be...
Right, and we're like, she's no longer musical.
That's right. Lost that. But no, so today, coming out, this really has nothing to do with Easter Sunday. I was going to try to make a segue, but I got nothing. But we're going to talk about purity culture
a little bit.
Is something we've talked about, touched on the podcast in the past.
Yeah.
There was an article that we had from Relevant, and the theme of the article was that we needed a new discussion on purity culture. Like, the church needed to retalk about purity culture. And you and I talked about the article at a bit of length before recording, and ultimately decided that the article was not really where we wanted to go with the conversation. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have our own new conversation about purity culture.
Yeah.
That is based loosely on the fact that that article exists in the world.
It's off the cuff. And here we go.
Here we go. Yeah. We're just going to see what happens. So let me, I guess, start at the beginning, mm-hmm. as all good things do. What do you remember about growing up and conversations within the realm of church mm-hmm. and sex? What do you remember about those? Because you were not in a Lutheran church.
I was not. I was in a Presbyterian church. Okay. So that is probably, I don't know how it was in the Lutheran church I imagine this is probably relevant mm-hmm. context for people that I was in a Presbyterian church.
Yeah.
PCA church, in fact, which is the least liberal, I think, of the Presbyterian churches.
Some would call that conservative, but least liberal least also. That's fine.
It makes me feel better to say least liberal because, listen, then I went to a Southern Baptist college.
Sure.
And I learned what conservative is.
Take a move to the right. You're right. That's fair. Yeah.
So, I mean, I grew up in the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. 90s and aughts was like my coming of age. So I got probably the brunt of like the purity culture mm-hmm. time frame mm-hmm. was in the 90s, right? By the time I was a teenager, it kind of started to morph a little bit.
Yeah.
But definitely my like middle school, elementary school years was very heavy, like purity culture.
Was it something that was talked about in church a lot?
In like youth group.
Yeah, sure.
A lot. I don't remember it being discussed much in like big church.
Yeah,
right.
Not Sunday morning.
Right.
Yeah.
But in like, there was a whole series that we did in like my middle school youth group that was the very like stereotypical, like, you know, if you have a sticky note and you stick it to something, then you remove it, it's less sticky and you can't stick it to more things. Uh-huh. And somehow that was supposed to tell us something about our sexuality.
Sure.
You know, that we're not going to be sticky. And like,
yeah, we should also probably tell our listeners, like, we're going to try to have this conversation in a mature fashion, but we're also both like 12-year-olds at heart.
Right. So yeah.
Things like not being sticky anymore are still really funny to me.
Yeah.
We're going to try. Yeah. But we're going to try hard to have.
But I mean, this is really what is being said.
Yes,
right.
I understand.
And,
yeah.
And the, you know, chewed gum, pre-chewed gum thing, you know, and.
Yep. Would you take the gum after it's been chewed by a room full of people?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Which, as an adult with some distance from this, I can see this is all horribly offensive and has.
Sure.
Almost nothing to do with the Bible. Maybe nothing at all to do with the Bible.
It has limited things to do with limited pieces of scripture.
Yeah. I guess depending on where you fall in that, it either has nothing to do with the Bible or limited things to do with the Bible. But it's not.
Some people would say it has everything to do with the Bible, but sure. Yeah.
Right. I will say that no, that's not real.
Yeah. I think outside of church, that's kind of where I was mm-hmm. as well. I was having similar experiences, similar conversations. They just were not happening in my church.
Right.
Within the Lutheran church, I don't know that this was universal to the Lutheran church in the 90s, but the default was basically like, we just don't talk about it.
Don't ask, don't tell. Yeah. Like, we're just too uncomfortable here.
Yeah. And I don't even necessarily mean that in about it. I think there was a lot of like, we don't know how to talk about it and so we just don't. And I'm not saying that's better.
It's kind of fair though. Like, I would rather have that than like, we're going to do actual harm.
Yeah. I think it was really like, if I'm looking back and trying to like give the best possible scenario to my church leadership as a teen, I would say there's probably enough emphasis of like, we want families to have this conversation on their own. So we're not going to have a conversation that could counter that here. Like,
yeah.
And so like, I know like there were conversations where we talked about dating and things like that, but it was never like, how do you that the conversations of like the purity culture, like what does this mean, or like how does this affect your relationship? Those all happen for me in non-congregation based faith settings.
Yeah.
I do remember very vividly being in high school. I was like a sophomore, and a leader who was working with us was like kind of in jest but kind of also seriously trying to get us to think about like, what's the purpose of dating if you're not going towards marriage? And he was like,
yeah,
he was, from his own personal standpoint, he was serious, but he was also like, you know, a junior in college at this point, and we were like sophomores in high school. But his emphasis was like, you have to think clearly about what your purpose is to be in a relationship, right? And for him, like the purpose of like all the steps that I take to get closer to someone, you know, for him it was of someone of the opposite sex, right? Mm-hmm. All the steps I take to get closer to someone push me towards marriage. And if I'm doing that without the intent of marriage, then I'm misleading that person and misleading myself. That was his point.
Okay.
Right. And I don't necessarily take that as like an offense. I wasn't offended by it. It gave me something to think about. Mm-hmm. But there was definitely that emphasis on like, oh, everything you do is pointed towards marriage, because marriage is the only holy place for a sexual relationship, and for like, that is the holiest goal of the people of God, is to be married and to be in that relationship.
Yeah. Can we talk about, sure. Let's pause here for a second. Yeah. I want to kind of talk about like the practicalities of this view, okay. like mm-hmm. in just like a modern dating sure. world, right? Yeah. That's an incredible amount of pressure to put
yeah.
on children mm-hmm. many times, mm-hmm. right? Who are trying to figure out how to be in relationship with friends even
sure.
or, you know, members of the opposite sex, members of their own sex if they're attracted mm-hmm. that way, you know, like who are trying to just figure out how to be in relationship. We all know that sometimes requires a lot of false starts, right? Like
sure.
like it's not, that is a learned skill to be in relationship with somebody, right?
Agreed.
Like
yeah.
and this idea that like you can only ever enter into relationship with somebody if you intend to marry them, like
sure yeah. And I'm trying to put nuance on somebody else's position, so yeah. I want to be careful in that because I can't speak for them. I think his intent was not don't date until you meet the person you're going to marry, mm-hmm. right? But it was, if you're dating, have a clear sense of what you're trying, because like there is a sense of like, oh, I'm dating in order to have a physical relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And he was countering that. Like, dating should not just be to have a physical end, right? That
right.
should not be the goal, right?
Right.
And so for him, as he was talking about it with us, a group of high school boys, he was mm-hmm. like, have a clear understanding of what the goal is.
Right.
And if you're not achieving that goal, have the authenticity to acknowledge that with the person that you're dating, right?
Right.
Which I do think there's a way for that to be healthy, but
right.
I certainly hear the pressure that it can put yeah. on something. Like if I enter into everything and I say like, okay, date one, sophomore in high school, is this the girl I'm going to marry? Like that is
people do that though. Kids did that. You yeah, know?
Absolutely. They do. Yeah. So I don't know that that's helpful, but mm-hmm. I do think there's an element of having a clear frame, and maybe this is something that comes with maturity of being mm-hmm. out of high school, right? But like having a clear frame of this is what I'm looking for. This mm-hmm. is what I'm searching for
yeah.
is something that I think adults who are still dating strive for, right?
Right.
And we don't want to mess around. We want to have a clear sense of this is
right.
what we're in it for.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I think that there is a lot of like middle ground and nuance where that can be
yeah.
like, I know what I am looking for in a partnership or a
sure.
relationship, and I don't want to enter into relationships that don't have the potential for this thing. Right.
Yeah.
Like just to satisfy some, you know, desire or mm-hmm. need that I have right now in the moment. Right. Because ultimately that would be selfish. Right.
Yeah.
So like, I think that there is a lot of that middle ground that is reasonable and a good way to think about relationships, right? Maybe like even falls in line with a good Christian sexual ethic.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that this idea of, well, you need to make sure that you're heading towards marriage with somebody is helpful
yeah.
or healthy.
Yeah. So maybe let's step back and talk about the role of marriage
mm-hmm.
Within this, because you brought up a piece before we were mm-hmm. recording, which I think is helpful that I want to point us back towards, right?
Mm-hmm.
That purity culture, which when we're talking about purity culture, we're talking about how particularly the evangelical church, but churches at large in the 80s and 90s really talked about a sexual ethic,
mm-hmm.
right? And the idea was you have to remain pure, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is no sex until marriage, end of story. That, I mean, and we'll get into some of the nuance that they had behind that. And by nuance, I mean strictness of like what that looked like.
By nuance, I mean none.
we'll get into some of the more specifics. I mean,
but
that's the gist, right? But it's rooted in primarily New Testament teachings, primarily Paul,
mm-hmm.
right? It's not something that's like searching the Old Testament for a whole bunch of stuff. It's primarily rooted in Paul's teachings. And as you pointed out, right, Paul was writing, and we've talked about this before, Paul was writing to cultures who were facing the Roman culture
mm-hmm.
and who were trying to address very specific concerns within
right.
the Roman culture in which they were living. And Paul was trying to draw them to be people who were living distinctly apart from the Roman culture in which they were, right?
Yeah.
Because Paul was very, very concerned with and attuned to following Christ means we are different than the people in the world. The Roman culture is the world as far as we can tell,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, whether or not we had any knowledge of Mayan, whatever other cultures might have
yeah.
existed, the Roman culture is the world as far as we can tell.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be clear that the calling of Christ is to live apart from that.
Yeah.
And anything that makes it blurry is to be weary of, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily foreboding, but
yeah.
But weary of, right?
Yeah.
And so like, there's the story in Corinthians that we've talked about before, where there's a guy who's sleeping with his mother-in-law, and Paul's like, that's
yeah.
probably not cool. Like,
right.
But in Roman culture, that probably wasn't a big deal,
right?
Or at least there were circles in which that would not have been a big deal, right? I'm not saying it was like widely practiced,
right?
But there was a lot more, fluidity is not the right word. There was a lot more.
Well, so my understanding of Roman culture is that male Roman citizen is at the very top. Like, right. Rome would sure. not be in line with what I would consider a good sexual ethic,
no.
right?
Yes.
Like, they
yeah.
were probably less concerned with some things
yes.
that I think maybe we should also be less concerned mm-hmm. with today. But in general, not in line with a good sexual ethic.
Right.
I'm going to say an awkward word. But
I love an awkward word.
In Rome, if you were a male Roman citizen, you had the right to penetrate anybody who was below you.
Sure.
Women, male and female
yeah.
slaves.
Yep.
Yeah. Anybody who was not another man's
yeah.
wife was the like exception to that rule.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
So like that's what's going on in Rome.
Yes.
And that
and the
is,
Roman culture. So Corinth and all the other
yes,
places.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But Rome also kind of not introduced, but kind of mainstreamed monogamy and marriage as well, which
sure.
is kind of an interesting cultural note too, is that if you read the Old Testament, polygamy was nothing but a thing.
Right.
Like everybody, mm-hmm. as far as I can tell, was like, oh, you're not too fussed about it. Got multiple wives, you know, whatever.
Yep.
And then it was along with Rome that they kind of mainline, okay, you can have one wife as a male Roman citizen, right? Like, this is what we're doing. This is we're ostensibly monogamous, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Rome is, or Paul's writing to the Romans and Corinthians as mm-hmm. well, is in opposition to what's happening in Rome,
right.
but also exists in tandem with it. It's in conversation with what's happening
right.
in that broader cultural context, right?
Yes.
And so then we have a lot of discussion about being the wife of one woman and stuff that we do
right.
pull from, and it, not just the purity culture, we pull it in other ways that
yeah,
is
absolutely.
Also in response to this shift that has happened culturally.
Right.
Right.
Yep. So yeah. purity culture, pulling on that really, that conversation that was happening with another ancient culture
mm-hmm.
and trying to just plop it into
yep.
our modern culture, which is not always the most helpful path mm-hmm. to take when we're doing that. And for whatever reason, in the 80s and 90s, purity culture, more than the other ways in which we do that, really like had this wide-reaching reach, which was,
it was
the redundant
a,
way to,
wide it, reach, yeah.
I was trapped by my own sentence structure.
Yeah.
It had this wide reach, and it really kind of went beyond just evangelicalism, right, and got into Presbyterian churches and Lutheran
mm-hmm.
churches and youth conferences, and you know, all these places where we were starting to see ramifications of that. And there are a lot of people who have written extensively about the ramifications of that as people have grown up.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's helpful to talk about a couple of the things that you and I have observed as like negatives of purity culture.
Yeah.
Like, what is it that we're really seeing? And the one that I always remember, even as a high schooler, like seeing and feeling uncomfortable with, was the emphasis that it put on female responsibility
uh-huh.
for the male's inability or unwillingness to control their own sexual
yeah.
desire. Right.
Yeah.
So like if we had I remember this explicitly when we went to a youth camp. Again, this is outside of my own denomination, but we went to a youth camp and girls were not allowed to wear certain swimsuits. And I mean, I guess theoretically, if a boy had like showed up in a Speedo, they probably would have been told to cover up.
But nobody actually cares.
But no, and nobody
yeah.
would have like, yeah, nobody
yeah.
would have done that. And like, but girls, oh, girls, you might, yeah. you might cause the boys to lust
right.
with how you dress, right?
Yeah.
Which, okay. I'm not going to deny that that's a possibility, but is that really the female's responsibility? Or should
right.
we be saying, hey, boys, that's a human body that has the human autonomy to dress how they wish to dress.
Mm-hmm.
Your responsibility is to treat them as a human and not be
yeah.
a lustful idiot who
right.
can't control. Like, yeah.
You know, I think it even sometimes goes deeper than that is what is our understanding of lust, right?
Well, I mean,
because
that's fair too, yeah.
I think my understanding as it was presented to me as a youngster was that lust is attraction, basically, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you're fighting a losing battle if you're caging all attraction as lust, right? Like,
I totally agree.
Like,
yeah.
that's attraction's a natural function, usually outside of your control, right? Like, what is lust then? Like, what are we trying to avoid? And I think if it's the commodification of human bodies, then that becomes a very different.
Yeah.
conversation, and we're less worried about what people are wearing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and more about how are we thinking about our fellow humans, you know, and how are we thinking about how we treat them and what they can do for
yeah.
us, what we can do for them, like that kind of thing.
Right.
Like that to me, like any degrading of somebody to their physical function for you.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that is more like the core of what lust is.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's, I guess for one thing, if we're talking about the church needing a new purity culture talk, maybe a reframing of what lust is or better understanding, right?
Well, sure. But let's hold on to that because we're still defaming a purity culture.
We're defaming,
we're,
yes, the fun part. The fun
still
part.
Still got to tear that
we're
down.
We're talking crap about purity culture.
Yeah. All right. So that's one, right? The,
yeah.
the the female responsibility and females mm-hmm. tending to bear the brunt, right?
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, and I'm sure there were places where men were told, like, hey, this is just as bad as for you, but, like, that was not the main thrust of the messaging was received. So that's piece number one. Piece number two, at least from my perspective, is that sex was almost always talked about in a negative context.
Yes.
Like maybe there was like a connotation of like it's meant to be a holy gift within the context of marriage. Maybe that was
that's a lot
a
of
context.
Pressure too, side note.
Agreed, but we're not there yet. Yeah. Right. But like maybe that was there, but it was every other conversation I heard about it was bad, right?
Yeah.
It's just evil. Right. It's a way to it tempts you away from God. It lures you away from mm-hmm. God. It's, you know, it's lust, it's temptation, it's whatever, right? It's not good. And I think that is a gross misreading of scripture and of kind of the theology that we have about human bodies and human relationships as well. That was a key point to it.
Yeah.
The last piece that we talked about is the question of who purity culture benefits.
Mm.
And we kind of came down on the fact that purity culture really was set up to benefit the powerful. Mm-hmm. And in this particular case, the powerful are men within mm-hmm. the church, right?
Yep.
And we see that with the first two pieces in particular, right? That men have this insatiable desire. And so women's job is to prevent men from lusting after mm-hmm. them. And then when they're in a marriage, their job is to satisfy their men's every desire. And that's the one piece of the article, not the only, but one of the pieces from the article that I thought was really helpful is really tearing down that element of purity mm-hmm. culture in particular to say like, it is unhealthy and unreasonable to say like a woman has to put all of her own needs, desires, etc. aside because the man has an insatiable desire and has to be met at all times. Like those are some of the grossest conversations that I remember having as a kid and even have continued to hear in cultures as a as an adult as well.
It's also a crazy way to view men. Like,
it
just like out of control beasts, right? Like it's really, at the end of the day, I think it's infantilizing, right? Mm-hmm. Like that you have so little control over your own base instincts and drives that like somebody else has to always be taking the fall for you and the responsibility. Like that's crazy.
No disagreements. Mm. Those are some of the major things that we see. Like this is why we need the new conversation, right? This is why we need to talk about purity culture, because what I think matters is that I do think Christianity, and by Christianity, I mean broadly faith in Jesus, right? I do think that calls us to a particular way of existing as sexual beings in the world. I do think there's a way to have a sexual ethic conversation.
Yeah, I do too.
But I think it needs to look different than what we did in purity culture. And and oftentimes we see like either we're going to lean harder into the purity culture side of the conversation, or we're going to lean into the kind of free will, you can do whatever you want, anything goes. And I don't think that that's a healthy approach to sexuality either. Like I think there's somewhere in the middle where like Jesus does have a calling on our life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that affects how we have relationships with other human beings, which includes sexual relationships with other human beings. And so I think that's where we're landing on like, this is why we need to have this new conversation.
Right.
And then we didn't like where she, as the author of the article, went. So we're going to have our own conversation.
Yes.
We're going to set the sexual ethic right now. We're going to solve all the problems.
And this is podcast. It. This is the ethic.
This is the ethic.
Right.
Yeah.
Quote this going forward.
Buckle in, everybody.
Right.
Here it is. Yeah. Groundbreaking. So, I don't even know how we want to start this, but if we were going to like set forth the start of a new sexual ethic, where would we want to start?
For me, I think that I see so much in Jesus's teaching a focus on the other, right? Like, how are you affecting the other? Mm-hmm. It's the whole like, even down to like, do not call out the speck in your neighbor's eye, but without examining the log in your own, like do unto others, like all that. So it, like, to me, like concern with how your actions affect the other people that you might be in relationship with, like might be at the core of how I think we should move through the world as Christians and also sexual beings. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that in a lot of ways, that's a much higher bar than purity culture, right? It sets for us. Like, I think if you're always thinking like, okay, like I am concerned for this person's like overall well-being, like I want to make sure I'm not getting into something or not behaving in ways that are harmful to this person or not healthy for this person or not what this person needs right now. You know, that is a very different bar from we're just going to wait until marriage and then I get whatever I want. You know, like that's I think to me a much more it's a bar that makes a lot more sense, right?
Sure.
Like it's actually accomplishing something versus just a threshold like that's kind of meaningless.
Yeah.
I
think that's helpful. Yeah. I think one thing that I would do, and I don't know that this is a completely fair read of purity culture, but I get the sense that purity culture starts from a Genesis 2 perspective, which is that we are sinful human beings who've been separated from God.
Right.
So Genesis 2, Eve takes the apple, gives it to Adam, who was there the whole time, by the way. But
could have said something. Yeah, didn't.
Right. Just to be clear. Right. Anyway, from my reading of purity culture, it kind of starts in that place. Mm-hmm. I think it would be helpful for us, particularly with what you're presenting, to start at Genesis 1. And Genesis 1 ends with the creation of humanity and God saying, God saw all that God had made and it was very good. Right. We are created as good creations of God. And so if I look at every other human being and see them first as a good creation of God, how does that impact how I treat that individual, whether there is an intimate relationship in our future or not? How do I treat other individuals as good creations of God? I think it is a fundamental grounding that I think we have missed, right? Because we hear that very good and then we're like, oh, but we sin. And then like, humans screw up. None of us are perfect. I'm not throwing out the doctrine of sin. I'm saying we were fundamentally created as good. And fundamentally, we are still to treat one another as though that we are the good creations of God that we were called to be.
Yeah.
All right. So if we start from this place of we're fundamentally good creations and we're going to not just seek to like hold off until some future deadline, but we're actually going to seek like what is best for the other in this encounter. If that if that's where we start, where do we go from there?
Well, sometimes it might be holding off until a future deadline, you know, like I'm very comfortable with that being a goalpost that people decide on for them. Right. Like, and I will say like for me and like kind of my own ethics in general, I tend to be a lot more comfortable with a lot more for other people than I am for myself. Right. Like I can hold those two things in tension and say like, you know, it's fine if you want to have your relationship look that way, right? If that's what you've decided between the two of you, like for me, I don't think that that would be the best way to do things, you know? And I both of those things, I think, can exist in tandem in this world, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and I do think that's where purity culture will push back and they will say, like, that's not a clear ethic, right?
Ethics are almost never clear.
I understand like, that, but I'm making someone else's point. Just roll with me for a second.
Okay, devil's advocate.
like they'll push back and say like biblical. They'll come from the perspective that biblical stances have to be clear. What they are refusing to do, or are perhaps incapable of doing, is the ability to do what I think you're doing responsibly, which is stand in the tension of biblical responsibility is not clear, right?
Right.
The biblical understanding of like dating and relationships does not exist in 2026, right? I mean, as you said before, there's pretty much multiple marriages or at least multiple wives in every story of the Old Testament virtually, right? And it's only later on that we start to have this understanding of like, okay, one man, one woman, what is it? I mean, God talks about it from very early on, but humans were not doing it, right?
Right.
And so then we move forward and we get into the New Testament and then it's like, okay, Paul writing to the Corinthians about all sorts of weird stuff and other like, you know, relationships that are clearly outside of the bounds of what we would even consider legal, let alone like ethically appropriate.
Right.
It's not talking about like, here's how two high schoolers who go dating should encounter one another, right? The Bible is not talking about that. It's not talking about like, how should you figure out if this is the person you want to marry for the rest of your life?
Right.
It's not talking about what do you do when you're in a marriage for 20 years and it seems like something's not working out. It doesn't talk about that. It just, like there are elements of scripture that we can look to for support and for encouragement, but there's not a verse that's going to say this is the clear-cut answer, right? And so I think we need to get away from expecting the Bible to do something it never claims to do for itself. And I think we do need to live in that tension of how do we use principles and fundamentals that are brought through Scripture, through the whole story of Scripture, and how do we start to apply that to a broader base of relationships in our culture today? Yeah. So I was playing devil's advocate, but really in order to emphasize the importance of living in the tension as you were encouraging us to live.
Oh, there you go.
See, I was supporting you. It's just taking the long route to get there.
Yeah, the scenic route on the support.
If you can't take the scenic route, then why bother?
No, I don't know. The direct route, traffic. I'm sure your point was well made.
Yeah, but I hear you. Yeah. Sometimes I just need to get to it rather than go around.
Right, yeah.
It's occupational hazard. All right, so we're gonna live in the tension. We're gonna start from a fundamental place of all people are created good. We're gonna live in some of that tension of not everything has to look the same for every person, right? I think that's helpful. There is something that I think we could be doing that we're not doing currently, and that is talking about it more.
Oh yeah, it's because we're all embarrassed.
It is.
Yeah,
and like and I totally get it. Like I could count on one hand the number of times that I've said sex or mentioned sex in a sermon at church, right? Yeah. And it, the number of times that it's happened, it's because something explicit in the text required me to say the word.
Dang it.
Like, listen, I get uncomfortable saying the word womb when we're talking about Mary during Advent, all right? Like,
womb? Womb, womb, womb.
Womb just feels like a word that I shouldn't say out loud. Like, it feels like a very private word, all right? I don't know why.
It's a private word?
Oh, I don't know why.
You spent time in a womb.
I know.
You're so red right now.
I'm just saying, I match my microphone. Yeah. Yeah. It feels like a word we shouldn't say a lot. But that's the thing, right? Like, I think, you know, when you're talking about it, we had all these conversations as kids in youth room, but we didn't talk about it in big church, right? Because adults don't want to talk about that.
Right.
And I think that adults don't want to talk about that because we're just as uncomfortable as the high schoolers trying to have the conversation. And I'm not saying that everybody needs to have this like wide open conversation where everybody should be talking about their sex lives all the time. Right. I am not advocating for that, right? Like there are important, healthy boundaries between what happens between you and your committed life partners and anyone else in the world. That's fine.
Right.
But I do think we need to do a better job of having these conversations more often to destigmatize and to really establish the value of the things that we're talking about, right? Like, we can't just rely on carryover from, oh, I talked about how we should love people all the time and how we should treat people as beloved children of God. I can't just count on that carrying over to how we enter into intimate relationships. I can't. And so it probably means that in some ways we need to have the conversation more often with our teens and more often with our adults.
Right.
And that is uncomfortable for everyone, including myself.
Right. It's tricky. And it's probably, I imagine, as a church worker, hard to hit the right note, right?
Because
you're not going to make everybody happy, right? That's the reality, is that people are going to come to this from all different directions, right? And they're going to be upset parents if you say something that's a little bit more progressive than they
or
would
conservative
like, or
than
the
they,
other direction, right? Like, you're gonna have that. So, like, that already feels like a minefield, right? And it's because we're also worked up about it to begin with.
I mean, even in our conversation beforehand, right? I mentioned one thing and you're like, well, that's not how I would talk to Gray about it, right? And which is fine. Like, you're allowed to have a different way of talking to Gray about it. But even within the room of just two of us,
right?
We were like,
Well, that was not, to be clear, that was not so much a reaction to something that, like, you were saying as, like, your stance. It was like, you were saying something, it just a stance that you were talking about, and I was just saying, just for clarity before we have this conversation, that is not how I am approaching it with my child.
But if you and I are in that conversation,
and we're already
generally aligned, we're at least aligned enough that we're in this room having this conversation, and so I can say this with confidence, I don't think that worship is necessarily the place to have this conversation on a regular basis, because it's just too broad of an audience, right? Because you're not going to talk to a 2-year-old the same way that you're going to talk to a 92-year-old that you're going to talk to a 40-year-old or a 16-year-old, like, you just can't do it.
First of all, the 92-year-old should be talking to you about it. They know way more than you do.
I
mean,
I don't want to know what the 92-year-old
is.
Speaking of things that turn me red. Anyway, that I don't know that that's the place. I think some honest conversation, like to say, like the things that we said of setting the groundwork of, like, everybody is a beloved child of God. Everyone is created as a good creation, right? We treat everyone with that honor and that dignity of, like, how do I care for this person that I see? I think those conversations are all great to have in worship and to have more often in worship. But I do think we need to create more spaces for us to have these conversations outside of worship in healthy and safe ways. And the reason that it's important is because they're having these conversations regardless.
Yep.
And we're probably not going to like most of the ways that they're having those conversations, right?
Right.
I mean, this is what happened as youth, right? We might remember, like, oh, if your parents aren't talking to you about this, your kids are learning it somewhere. And do you want them learning it from you, or do you want them learning it from the internet, right?
Yeah.
And I definitely don't want them learning it from AI at this point, right? The internet was bad enough, let alone whatever's out there now.
Yeah.
So there's that. But I also know, like, we've talked about Mark Driscoll before.
Oh, Mark Driscoll. Oh, I watched his series on marriage and sexuality before I got married as, like, suggested viewing as part of my premarital counseling.
I have a lot of questions, but we don't have time for those right now. Yeah. So we'll do that later. But he's had stuff that's come up recently about some conversations that he and his wife are leading about, like, biblical marriages and biblical relationships. Mm-hmm. And even just, like, the clips that come through a feed on a Facebook reel, right? I can guarantee you that he and I are going to come down on very different understandings of what a biblical a faithful Jesus following idea of a marriage relationship should look like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I don't want him leading that conversation, but he's doing it,
right?
He's out there having that, and people are flocking to his opportunity,
right?
In the same way, people are continuing to have purity culture conversations, and kids are continuing to have questions,
right?
And so if they have questions and they know, oh, I can go to this place and they're going to talk about it, they don't know if that's right, wrong, or indifferent, right? Most kids hear something and assume the adult in the room is telling them, well, I don't know that that's fair, but they're most kids, if they enter into a conversation and there's an adult presenting a piece, they're not cognitively able to like challenge that. They're not able to like sit there and say, I think about that differently. So if we're not having that conversation with our youth from an appropriate age, at an appropriate way, on a regular basis, they're going to get it somewhere.
Yep.
And we're going to end up right back where we are in 20 years saying, hey, we need to have another talk about purity culture. And then Beyond Sunday is going to have to do this all again.
Right. We'll still be here 20 years from now.
Beyond Sunday.
Right.
Live from... Yeah, I was trying to do it without teeth anyway. Because I assume all my teeth have fallen out
at
in 20 60? Years.
Yeah.
58.
59. 59, okay, yeah.
Not 40 yet.
Right.
Got another couple good months left.
I was
in
rounding up, yeah.
Rude.
Sorry.
All right, anything else that we feel like we should hit today?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think one thing that you and I kind of talked about is we fundamentally disagree with the article that, you know, we don't need a new purity talk.
Right.
We need to do away with that and find something new and better.
Which doesn't mean ditch a sexual ethic.
Which
right?
does not mean purity and a sexual ethic to me are two different things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So how then do we start talking about a sexual ethic that feels rooted in Christ and the story of the gospel, right? And also holds people's individual experiences in tandem, right?
Like, I think there is, you know, now that you're saying this, this is Easter, and I think this is helpful. There is something to the idea of purity in Christ, right? That our purity comes only through Christ. That's the fundamental understanding of Christianity and the death and resurrection of Jesus, is that it's only through Jesus that we are made pure, right? Because all those sacrifices of the Old Testament were there in an effort to make the people clean before God. And ultimately, they cannot fulfill what needs to be fulfilled. And so Jesus dies. And so that is the means through which we are made clean, made pure, right? And so if our purity is rooted in Christ in the same way that our goodness is rooted in our creation as God, right? I don't know that our sexual experiences...
They
don't affect our purity, right? Because we're still made pure. Do they affect our health and our well-being and our relationships with other people? Absolutely.
Those are very real, tangible things. In the same way that your choices around food affect your health and well-being.
Don't be a cannibal.
We had this conversation earlier where I was like, it's like food. It's neutral. If you eat your neighbor's kid, it's bad.
Of all the examples of bad things to eat, we went straight to cannibalism.
I didn't want anybody to think I was talking about them and trying to fat shame.
Except for the cannibals, who were fine shaming.
We're fine. Yes, I will shame cannibals.
I did learn recently that there is a culture in... I don't want to be... I think it's in Southeast Asia, but I could be wrong about the location. But there is a culture where they like have an exemption from the UN, and they're essentially allowed to exist as... cannibals, but the way they do it is that they have ashes of their beloved, like their beloved who have died. And they take the ashes, they feed the ashes, or maybe it's not even ashes, it's like the body. They feed the body to fish. The fish eat the body, and then they eat the fish. Yeah. Anyway, that is not
the... Any fish in the ocean could have eaten part of a body at some point, you know?
Definitely true.
Right.
All right. I think that... Back to the point, right?
Yeah.
It's like food, or it's like food. It's ethically neutral, right?
Right. Yeah. To me, that is a... That feels like a more balanced understanding of sexuality, right? To say, okay, this thing was created like everything else and is ethically, morally neutral on its own. And it's what you do with it.
It's how
you approach it that changes that, shifts one way or the other, you know? And then I think from there, there's a lot of discussion like in individual preferences that can come up and come into play, right?
Sure.
Like, but I think just having that as a baseline of... ethically neutral, matters what you do with it. Mm-hmm. Always important to consider the well-being of the people that you're coming in contact with, right? And to hold them as sacred as well as children of God, right? Like, then that, it is much more complicated than some arbitrary bar,
For
right?
Sure.
But I think that's a more comprehensive approach.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think we solved it.
Yeah.
Good work, team.
Good work.
Yeah. We don't even need Patrick to create a new sexual
ethic. I know, yeah. We did it with Adam.
Well, hey, if you enjoyed this episode, we have a number of episodes where we've talked about similar topics, mm-hmm. Purity culture, religion's treatment of LGBTQ communities, yep. A number of others. So you can go find those. They're all on the website. Mm-hmm. You can find them at beyondsundaypodcast.com, which will redirect you to the new Lord of Life website, and you can find all of our episodes there. Or you can send us an email at beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. And I don't know, what's our question for today? Oh, let us know what April Fool's jokes you chose to play this year. We'd love a good April Fool's joke. Yep. Absolutely. You want to do Patrick's thing?
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.